you're ready to stand on the line, if you're ready to fight back and serve it to the criminals trying to enslave you and steal your wealth through monetary creation and exorbitant taxation, you're in the right place. Welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out jmbullion.com today.
Our individual first aid kits are now on sale. They're Mali-compatible pouches in Coyote, ACU, OD, or Black. They're equipped with an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, TK4 tourniquet, suture kit, and lots of extras. It's perfect for your car, bug-out bag, or home first aid kit. Go to the PrepperRecon.com homepage and click on the IFAC store tab at the top of the page. They're on sale for $89, and that includes shipping. This kit could save your life.
Hey, Preppers and Patriots, this is part two of my interview with John Rubino, talking about predictions for 2015. Enjoy the show. It's often said that the dollar's backed by oil. You know, that's going back to the petrodollar agreement made by Henry Kissinger with the Saudis, after the Bretton Woods, default, I guess we should call it, a couple years later. Kissinger went over there and established that. But I'd argue that the dollar's backed by lead. I think the reason we've seen DHS buying billions of rounds of ammo is that they're stocking that into Fort Knox. I think if we opened up the vaults, I think we'd see stacks and stacks and cases of ammo. Russia and China are buying gold, and the U.S. is buying lead. What do you think has kept the dollar propped up for so long, and can the central bankers keep it going for another year?
Oh, well, yeah, part of it is definitely military. You know, as you mentioned before, The minute a country starts talking about using something else other than dollars, bad stuff seems to happen to it. And that's not lost on the other countries of the world. And, you know, part of the whole petrodollar thing, you know, part of the reason that the dollar is used, for oil, which is really the basis of the dollar's, reserve currency status around the world, you know, you have to have dollars if you want to buy oil. That goes back to a deal in which we guaranteed Saudi Arabia's security in return for it only accepting dollars for oil. So yeah, you know, our military has a big role to play in all of this. But again, that's not a perpetual motion machine where, you know, we do it and then it allows us to borrow as much money as we want to for the rest of human history with impunity. It allows us to borrow more money than we would have otherwise, but it doesn't buy us a guaranteed future. All it does is create a bigger crisis out there when this extraordinary amount of debt that we've borrowed, we've taken on, blows up. And so in that sense, you know, the fact that our military is a big part of the dollar's reserve status is actually a bad thing because it's allowed us to borrow even more than we would have if we just had a powerful economy that gave us a strong currency, you know? And so at some point, our finances don't support a global military empire anymore. You know, as it is, we've kind of, in effect, been borrowing our military budget from China for the last few years anyhow. And at some point, that doesn't work anymore. And so either we scale back voluntarily or the market forces us to close down some of our 100 military bases and just pull our soldiers back. And, you know, we're more than capable of defending the United States proper. But we are, you know, a lot like the old Roman Empire, for instance, in that we've taken on obligations all around the world that are more and more expensive every day to protect. And so we have to borrow more and more money in order to protect these far-flung interests that we think are crucial to our national security. And eventually, the process of borrowing that money actually detracts from our ability to project power around the world, and it actually hurts our national security. So we're very close to that point now, I think.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. KD Armor offers affordable body armor, including level 3 trauma plates made of AR-500 steel. They can endure multiple rounds from pistols and rifles up to 7.62 NATO. Their plates are available with Rhino Linings coatings to reduce spaw. go to katiearmor.com. That's CATIArmor.com today. And John, you've said before that when an economy starts getting close to the end, you've compared it to a top. And when you spin a top, it'll spin very smoothly and it starts to wind down. It'll start to wobble. Now, in the past month or two, we've seen these wild swings in the stock market. We've seen up days and down days of 200, 300 points. Silver, we've seen up days and down days of 3, 4, 5%. Is that what you're talking about with that wobble?
Yeah, volatility will start going up and start really dramatically increasing. That's think back to 2006, 2007. We saw that for a while there where the market would go up 300 points in a day and then down 400 and nobody knew what it all meant. Well, what it means is that the smooth running of the global financial system is starting to fail and it's starting to spin out of control. But we really don't know whether it's going to be a melt up or a melt down. And so you see these wider and wider swings. You know, the stock market now in the U.S. on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, 100 points in a day is nothing anymore. You know, you kind of expect to see that or else it's not even worth paying attention to. And what was it yesterday? 300 and some points down, then another 100 points, 100 and some points down today. And what that means is that the system is starting to spin out of control or that this is a false alarm and it'll smooth back out again because of some, you know, we can't know until retrospect what anything really means. But this is what it will look like when the system really does start to spin out of control. So this should be very familiar to people who lived through the 2007, 2008, 2009 crisis. And whether this is the beginning of the next one or whether we have a while to go, I have no idea. But it'll feel like this when it happens. And this will just be the foothills on the way to the mountain. You know, we've got some astoundingly big days out there where the stock market drops by 800 points or 1,000 points and gold goes up by $100, silver by $10, and you know, the dollar loses 5 or 10% of its value in a day. All of that stuff is out there. And it's a question of when. And that is, although a lot of guys have some very specific predictions out there now about it, I've never been very good at saying, oh, next month, this is what's going to happen, you know, so I don't even try anymore. But it could happen soon just because so many big things are in their own way spinning out of control. You know, you got the Greek election coming up, which could be extremely important. You've got oil, the effects of which have yet to be felt. You know, we've seen oil go down, but we haven't seen any huge financial reverberations from that yet. You know, no big bankruptcies or anything. They're coming. We've got all kinds of geopolitical stuff going on out there. We've got the strong dollar, which is actually a problem for us. You know, it's a vote of confidence in a sense because everybody wants to put money into the U.S. because they perceive that us to be a safe haven, you know, someplace that's actually in better shape than the rest of the world. But a higher dollar raises the cost of debt service in the U.S. You know, we've borrowed so much money now that any little bit of difficulty, additional difficulty hurts. And the dollar going up by 10 or 15% against a lot of other currencies hurts a lot. So in effect, that's like a higher interest rate. It means you have to get more expensive dollars in order to pay back your loans. So we can't endure too much more of this, but it looks like we're going to see some more because the capital flows into the U.S. aren't abating. Everything that happens out there that scares people leads them, among other things, to want to own treasury bonds and want to buy U.S. real estate because that's perceived to be the one place that's immune from the breakup of the Eurozone and a China driven financial crisis in Asia and the meltdown of the Japanese yen. You know, all of these things are out there rather than here. So if you put some money here, you feel like it's safe. But of course, that just delays the inevitable because, you know, we're really at the epicenter of all of this. We owe more money than anybody else. And when the time comes for that debt to be paid back, people are going to find out that we can't do it any more than they can do it.
And you have a spectacular track record for real estate. What do you think we'll see in the real estate market for 2015? Do you think the bubble will be reinflated?
Well, real estate is kind of an interesting segment because on the one hand, it's real. You know, the government can't just snap its fingers or press send on a Fed computer and create a whole bunch of new real estate. You know, there's only so much farmland. There's only so much beachfront property. There are only so many penthouses in Manhattan. And so that stuff tends to hold its value over long periods of time. You know, but on the other hand, all of that is kind of in a bubble right now. There's so much capital flowing into it that it has become very expensive. And so when a turn does come, there are going to be air pockets under the prices of a lot of this stuff. And it's leveraged. You know, you borrow money to buy these things a lot of the time. And that really increases the air pocket underneath it when the turn comes. So we've seen high-end real estate collapse several times in our lifetimes, Mark. And there's no reason why we can't see it happen again. So with real estate, I just don't know. There's a lot of capital flowing in. And the air pockets are getting bigger and bigger. So maybe the capital keeps flowing and real estate keeps going up. Or maybe the capital stops flowing at some point and the air pocket, you know, the real estate hits the air pocket and just plunges. I don't know. Again, it comes back to the whole what we have to look forward to is crazy stuff thesis. You know, it's really hard to know what the details of this are going to be because there are so many moving parts. And there are so many players who are no longer, you know, they're not part of the market, the government that's in there buying equities and pushing down interest rates. They're distorting markets. They're not operating within the confines of free markets. And so that makes it also harder to predict because you've got these guys with basically unlimited amounts of money to play with, and their agenda is not profit maximization. They're trying to stay in power. And so they're doing things that get them through the next election without much regard to what kind of a signal it sends to one part of the you know, the construction industry or the financial services industry, and what those people then do with those signals and all the capital that's being misallocated because of these missignals. You know, they're not paying attention to that right now. They just want to get through the next election, and so that makes it very, very hard to predict what happens next year, because so much of it depends on some guy sitting in a room who's under pressure and who has no idea how markets work in the first place, but has unlimited cash at his disposal and so could do almost anything. You know, it makes it really complicated for somebody who is trying, first of all, to, let's say if you're a technician out there, you're a hamburger now because, the government sees the same technical signals that you see, and they can intervene and push a market down, for instance, below its 200-day moving average, which you see, and you think, oh, that's a signal to sell. So you jump in and sell, and it pushes the price of whatever it is down even further. But really, you're just doing the government's bidding. You know, there was no fundamental reason for it to drop below the 200-day moving average, just because the government decided that's what they wanted in the moment. And there are dozens of markets that are like that now, where the big banks or the big banks working for the governments or governments directly are intervening. Yeah. So this is a crazy world. We've never seen anything like this before.
No, and the guy you were just talking about that's sitting in the room with his calculator and his ink pens and his whatever, we don't know what he's going to do. We know he's going to make a decision. We can say with some certainty that it's going to be a bad decision. We just don't know which bad decision he's going to make. So not knowing which bad decision he's going to make makes it very, very difficult, I would think, to put an exact date on when everything's going to fall apart. But now we've got some really, really smart people out there that, really know what they're talking about that have put some dates on 2015. Martin Armstrong's one, he's predicted that it's October 1st of 2015, and that's basically the end of the world financially. Harry Dent, he's also another smart guy, and most of the stuff he says makes a whole lot of sense. He's calling for $700 gold, and he predicts the next Great Depression to start in mid-March. So basically like the Ides of March. I've seen some doomsday dates come and go. But do either of these dates have you concerned?
Well, these are two very smart guys. And yeah, I don't have any sense of what specific date should be the end of the world. and they do. And those dates both sound very reasonable to me, because I thought the world as we know it should have ended in 2005.
Right.
and so, you know, any date in the not too distant future.
We've had a 10-year stay of execution.
Reasonable. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think we're living on borrowed time right now, literally and figuratively. And I think that it's very easy to envision some of the stuff that we've talked about blowing up in the next 6 months or a year and a half, and taking down the whole system with it. You know, I could see that happening very easily. And so, yeah, you know, it's completely possible that this stuff happens, and that this is really the, you know, 2015 is basically the end of the road for the world as we know it. That is, big governments with very powerful central banks running fiat currencies and spending as much as they want and borrowing as much as they want, you know, that whole thing, ending. So, yes, I can see it happening. My sense is that, In times of extreme stress, people will tend to go towards gold, whereas they might not buy that high-end real estate anymore because it's a leveraged asset that can drop like crazy, but they will want real money. And, you know, that also could be wrong in the short run. You know, it could be a deflationary vortex that takes down everything, including precious metals. You know, and that happened in 2008. We had a horrible year for gold and silver in 2008, but then the world's governments responded to the financial crisis by just opening the floodgates and printing so much new currency that it ignited a huge bull market in precious metals and every other kind of risk asset. So I would expect that to happen again. You know, I don't think these guys will go out, you know, let everything fall apart without, trying to lean against it by creating even more fiat currency. You know, $10 trillion didn't do it last time. Paul Krugman is going to be out there saying that, well, you know, what's wrong is that we didn't create enough new currency and we didn't borrow enough new money. So let's do that. And at that point, you know, and when everything's falling apart, when you've got a deflationary crash going on and somebody with a Nobel Prize is standing there saying, oh, this is easy to fix. You know, we'll just create $25 trillion and we'll give it to everybody. You know, and why won't people say yes to that? I would think they would do it. And I think the governments of the world will try it. And I think they'll end up destroying their currencies in the process. And so that, in other words, the world becomes like Russia with a plunging currency and spiking interest rates and total chaos in the financial markets, where the only certainty is gold. I think that's out there. And whether it is next year or this year or 5 years from now, that's what is impossible to say, I think. But I think that eventually there will be a time when people are glad they have real money. And, The only question is when that's going to be and what happens in between now and then.
And I think you're right that that folks will tend to rush into gold. And maybe what Harry Dent's thinking is that it's not the U.S. consumer, because the U.S. consumer doesn't buy gold. And maybe they won't. And maybe they won't have any savings to buy any gold. And they're too upside down in debt to buy any gold. But there's trillions and trillions of U.S. dollars being held outside of America. And what are those people going to buy with those dollars? Because they can't go to the local Walmart, or they can't go to the Chevy dealership or anywhere else, or to the gun store or anywhere else in America, because they're not even in the country. So what are they going to buy with those dollars? And I think that those people are going to buy gold and silver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we're seeing it already with China and Russia and India, who are really aggressive buyers of gold and silver at these price levels. You know, we basically put it on sale for them by forcing the price down lately. So from their point of view, this thing that they really wanted to buy anyhow got way cheaper, and they're loading up on it. So it's hard to see a world that is more chaotic than this one, in which people look around and say, oh, okay, gold is something I don't want to own, right? I find that hard to believe from a psychological point of view, because it seems like increasing chaos naturally leads you to seek out certainty. And I think the deflationist argument is that, well, that certainty is going to be the U.S. dollar, because so much debt has been created in dollars around the world. And that means people who have to pay off their debts need to get dollars. So there's going to be huge demand for dollars just to pay off the existing debts of the world. And that's going to make the dollar go up, and that'll be the world's safe haven asset. And gold will pale into insignificance next to the, you know, the might of the dollar. And maybe, you know, it's happened this year, huh? But I think that our numbers are so horrendous, and that for the dollar to go up much from here will lead to crises in the U.S., which will take a lot of the shine off of the dollar, because let the dollar go up another 10 or 20% from here, and you've got U.S. multinational corporations having trouble selling around the world because they're being priced out, because their stuff is in dollars, you know, so it's going up in price. And you've got the emerging markets around the world that have borrowed a lot of money in dollars and now have to pay back in much more expensive dollars and are, you know, in part bankrupted by that process. And they buy stuff from us, you know. Who's going to buy our stuff if everybody in the world is bankrupted by a strong dollar? So I don't know. I think that a strong dollar is not a panacea for us. You know, it's a vote of confidence. It's a good thing in the early stages of a bull market in the country's currency, but later on it becomes a burden. And I think we're into the area now where it's a burden. We're already seeing slowing economic statistics coming out of the U.S. government. You know, manufacturing is down, and inflation is falling, and GDP is not going to be nearly as strong next quarter, apparently, as it was last quarter. So we're already slowing down. And that's with the effects of the dollar that was lower back then when these numbers were generated than it is now, and that maybe it will be in the next 6 months. So I think we will be a lot like Europe 6 months from now. You know, they've had a strong currency for a few years, and they're dropping back into recession because of it. Same thing with Japan. Well, now their currencies are way down and ours is up. So it's easy to expect us to suffer the same kinds of problems that these guys, that Europe and Japan, have suffered for the last few years. And that won't be a pretty picture for us, especially from the point of view of our government leaders trying to get reelected. So what they will do is go back to QE. You know, they'll open the floodgates and start creating a huge amount of new currency and try to force the dollar back down. So we'll see the currency war shifting back and forth in that way. And that, other things being equal, is good for gold. You know, when you've got a government that is actively trying to depreciate its currency, that's a signal that you want to buy real money and avoid the paper currency that governments can actually do that with, can actually force down.
And you've mentioned so many of the black swans, and actually, they're not even that rare anymore. I think Andy Hoffman may have coined the term gray swans, because they're we can't even really call them black swans anymore. But whatever you want to call these ominous fowl circling overhead, are there any ones that we didn't get a chance to cover that have you concerned for 2015?
Let's see. I think the emerging markets are a big deal. We've talked about that. The oil patch, very big deal. We talked about that. Europe, Japan, China. No, you know, we've covered everything that comes to mind.
What about bright spots? Are there any bright spots for 2015? At the very least, could we say that maybe cheap gas will be a temporary respite for the U.S.
cheap
consumer?
Well, cheap gas is sort of poetic justice in a way, because it's a big tax cut for the people who actually deserve a tax cut. And it's a problem for the people who actually deserve to be hurt. You know, the big banks and the oil companies, these guys who made out from government largesse in the last decade at the expense of individual taxpayers, are now being hurt. And the rest of us, you know, if we drive to work, we're getting a little bit of a break on that. So that's a good thing. But in the aggregate, it's not a good thing, because we've got so much debt tied to energy. If that debt blows up, then that means a lot of people get laid off. You know, well, it's already happening in the oil patch. It turns out that a big percentage of the job gains of the last few years have been energy related. And so you take them out, and you're left with McDonald's and, you know, Target, Walmart, and jobs that nobody really wants to do in the first place, don't pay enough to support a family, but that's all that's left in the economy. And so, you know, Texas could have a recession next year. That's what some of the big analysts are predicting. Texas was the bright spot among the big states in the U.S. And they were very cocky about it. Well, now it turns out it was energy related. And so there's going to be a lot of energy related layoffs that will reverse out the last few years' gains. I don't think there are a lot of finance bright spots. There are a huge number of technological bright spots. You know, we are making breakthroughs everywhere you look, whether it's digital medicine or genomics or genetic engineering or solar power or artificial intelligence and robots and things like that. You know, we're really creating a much, much better, more interesting world out there. But we're doing it in context of a looming financial crisis. So actually, I'm starting a new book, and the working title is After the Crash. And it's going to be about all the cool stuff that we'll have to invest in after we get this financial crisis out of the way. You know, at the bottom, when Google is down by 80% and Apple is $20 down from $100 today, and all these biotech companies that have cures for diseases that have bedeviled the human race for 10,000 years. When we have cures for these things coming online, we're going to be able to invest in them. And we're going to have a reasonable chance of making a ton of money by doing it. So that's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to coming back 3 or 4 years from now, Mark, and talking about optimistic themes with no depressing stuff at all.
Great. Well, we'll get you back on when that book comes out, because you have to be thinking about it and have your strategy together before the opportunity presents itself. So we'll definitely get you back on when you get that book out. Now, you've done a great job of tracking all this stuff on your website. Can you tell the folks where they can find you?
Sure. I run dollarcollapse.com, which is continuously updated news aggregation site/blog that covers a lot of the stuff that you and I talked about. And you can also go there and find an ad for The Money Bubble, which is my newest book, which you can buy on Amazon or any other electronic bookstore.
And that's also available now in Kindle, and it's out in audio, which I've got a lot of listeners that, they're audiobook fans, and that's why we listen to podcasts. It's because we're busy, but we're always doing something, like we were talking about before the show, when you're doing yard work or gardening or waxing the car or going to the gym on the glider or whatever, throw in an audiobook. It's a great way to multitask and get a good workout for your mind. Maybe while you're at the gym, getting a workout for your body to get in shape for 2015.
Yes. It's just out on audible.com.
John, thanks so much for making time to come on the show.
Thanks, Mark. Enjoyed it.
Are we living in a time of which there is more prophetic writings than of any period in history? Noah Parker, like many in the United States, has been asleep at the wheel. During his complacency, the founding precepts of America have been slowly, systematically destroyed by a conspiracy that dates back hundreds of years. The signs can no longer be ignored. Watch through the eyes of Noah Parker and his family as a global empire takes shape. Ancient writings are fulfilled, and the last days fall upon the once great United States of America. The Days of Noah, Book 1, Conspiracy, by Mark Goodwin, is a fast-paced fiction thriller which looks at how modern conspiracies could play into biblical prophecy concerning end times. Buy The Days of Noah in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition at Amazon.com today.